The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. It is a sweltering Wednesday afternoon. I will tell you that it was very hot and humid last night in Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
I wasn't sure where you were. I just saw you had a concert.
Went and saw Ringo Starr and his All Stars, and really good. I mean, had let's see, we got to hear three Toto songs. We got to hear three Average White Band songs. We got to hear three. I mean, because you have like very prominent people that he has usually the lead guy, like Colin Hay from Minute Work.
Okay,
was there. So he played that, and that was a really good show. I was impressed that the guys could stay up on stage, and a couple of them wearing jackets. I mean, Ringo had on a jacket, and Steve Lukather from Toto wore a dress jacket.
Yeah, like a sport coat.
Outside.
I was
going to
say, is this an open air venue?
Oh right? Yeah, Mercedes-Benz Amphitheater, something really nice. Really nice amphitheater.
Are there ways to cool the performers on stage potentially? Like, could
I don't
you
know.
Have...
We weren't 15 rows back, and it sure didn't look like it.
Wow, and they're still rocking. So maybe
they were.
Yeah.
They
okay.
Were.
Well, I mean, Ringo's always been one of the cooler guys.
Unbelievable.
Out there,
he's about to be 85. He's still hopping around the stage.
Did you see that? Like, I guess they opened a Coca-Cola amphitheater in Birmingham.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was the thing.
That's brand new, yeah.
And it is downtown, right?
Yes.
And that's going to – apparently they are shooting pretty high as far as the performers they want to bring
Dave
in.
Dave Matthews last night.
Over, yeah, they open it with Dave Matthews. But so Bill.
Yeah.
How Beatlesy is the Ringo Starr in the All-Star Band?
He just does the songs that he's known for with them. Boys, which he sang,
sure.
Octopus's Garden.
Does he close?
With a Little Help from My Friends.
I was going to ask if either With a Little Help from My Friends
or Yellow. Is pretty much the last. Yellow Submarine.
Or Yellow Submarine.
Yellow Submarine is one, is a sing-along fairly early. But yeah, the last song before Encore is going to be With a Little Help from My Friends.
And that's I think that's a staple of the All-Star Band sort of in general, which makes sense considering it's a group of
colleagues. He's got help from his friends.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like...
They're really good.
And hey, you mentioned Colin Hay, who is just fantastic, too. I'm a big fan of... I mean, Men at Work's got like three songs that you'll hear on classic rock radio. Now Wings probably plays...
Yep.
Who Can It Be Now, and Down Under, mm-hmm. and maybe Overkill. But those are all three just – and he's got a pretty deep catalog, too.
Those are the ones he did last night.
And an interesting guy, if you ever get a chance to hear him talk about his story and his music and his eyeball. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got all kinds of cool stuff to talk about.
Well,
so.
I mean, well, that's the thing. They let the guys
that's
talk,
really cool.
And the guys all have a little fun. Hamish Stewart from the Average White Band was a funny guy too, and really, really talented. So I mean, yeah, it was a great show. It would have just been nice if it was inside. And Ringo, when he first came out, he said, "I thought L.A. was hot." He said,
yeah.
No, but no, it was a fun show. Made it up there and back with some drenched. Some drenched clothes.
You did okay. You
made it.
Yeah,
we made it. Although the check engine light came on.
You made it, hopefully the car made it too.
Yeah, that's why you don't see mine in the parking lot right now.
No, it's good. It's good to have you back. We were wondering about the report we would get on the show yesterday. Justin Ferguson filled in yesterday. It was great to talk to Justin on a Tuesday and I know it's good to see you again, Bill.
Yeah, well, it is the Wednesday show, and Jason Caldwell, who he and family trekked up the East Coast this past week is back in town. How were your travels,
Jason? Yeah, it was good. A lot of them, a lot of miles. I think we did over 2,000 miles. I think I kind of figured it out roughly by looking at MapQuest afterwards. But Charleston for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's nice.
So my daughter is a history person. Mm-hmm. So she presidents, history, which is great for an 8-year-old. I love it.
Yeah.
So we did Charleston for a couple of days. Did like a buggy car, a horse and buggy tour of downtown, which we had done before, but it gives history of this house and history of these things.
Was the weather?
It was great.
Okay, that's good. I mean, that's the thing. That would not be fun if it was 95 and humid.
We had great weather there. Great. So from there we stopped over in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, just on the way up to Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Did Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And then the next day did the World of Hershey tour. So Hershey, Pennsylvania, folks, and I'd always heard, they make chocolate bars there. It is Dollywood times 10. I'm telling you, the whole town.
Another place with a pretty amazing story,
if you don't know the story of Milton Hershey, I know this is.
By all means.
People need to look it up.
It's June, Jason. Yeah, I mean,
To understand, like, he didn't have any children. So all of his wealth went to the trust. So everything he gave to his trust, they built a school there. And there's a school in Hershey. There's a Hershey High School, but there's also a Hershey School where you apply to get to go to school there. They have host families that host children from elementary school all the way to high school.
Started out of a desire to help orphans.
Yes,
right.
Correct.
I believe that was.
Yes, and he ended up doing the same thing in Cuba too. He built another town in Cuba where he got his sugar. The same thing as Hershey.
I know a lot of this because it becomes a plot line on Mad Men when Hershey is a potential target for the agency, and there's an orphan or someone who grew up as an orphan working at the agency, and he talks a lot about what he knows of Milton Hershey.
I watched it. I don't even recall that.
Towards the end, there's a Hershey a Hershey related story, but there's. I guess the story is Milton Hershey was shocked by the conditions of an orphanage at some point in his life, maybe as a child, and then like always resolved that if he got success, he would help orphans and orphanages.
And did not have children of his own, and so that was part of it. But the school is incredible. I mean, like it looks like a college campus. I mean, the buildings, the grass, everything, it's incredible. And then they said, look, everybody that graduates here gets a brand new computer. They get there's something else. I can't remember what it was. But then they get $100,000 in scholarship to the school or trade school of their choice.
Wow.
It's a prestigious school, too. Yeah, so, I mean, your options are.
So it was great. And then from there, we did Philadelphia, walking tour of downtown Philadelphia. So we saw Independence Hall, Liberty Bell, Betsy Ross House, Christ Church. All those things, and then a stopover in D.C. on the way home to saw the National Cathedral, and went to the National Zoo there. We've been to D.C. before, so a good trip.
D.C. is, I mean, especially if she maintains her interest in history, I feel like you can visit D.C. multiple times and see different things that, I mean, I know you've already, I believe you already,
we did that last summer.
Yeah, with through Coach.
Yes. And we did that last summer. And
when she's a little older, Arlington is that.
Already,
that's, yeah.
We've already done it.
Yeah. Too. I mean, Arlington completely blew my mind.
Yeah. So there's DC, you could do a month almost. You really could.
You know, visiting Buffalo for the WNIT final, I was stunned by how much, how many ties to key figures in American history there are. In Buffalo, I mean, there are multiple statues of mayors or governors who became. I think Taft lived in Buffalo for a while.
Two or three.
Roosevelt.
Yeah.
I think Grover Cleveland. Like these are all like people who lived in Buffalo, which was a major metropolitan area, throughout the the 1800s, and so it produced a lot of key figures. But I knew none of this, and McKinley. I think McKinley has like a park. Downtown because he might have been mayor of Buffalo. So there's like, I mean, it's wild to, that's one of the cool things about getting to travel to some of these places you don't see very often
and that's exactly why we've decided to do it the last couple of summers is to see parts of the country. And so it's been good. Get to learn a lot of things along the way and see places that you've heard about
and
your
do
entire
it while
life.
You can.
Yep, and
I
that's
mean,
it.
Before she's actually too big or got other things that appear to be more
important.
Yeah,
so it was a lot of fun, but good to be back. And this time of year that's, the craziness that this is. And I mean, obviously, you know, a lot everybody's going to talk about kind of losing commitments and those kind of things. And it's and I tried to explain this, and we did a live show Monday night, myself and Christian Clemente, and I'm like, at every stop along the way, the NCAA and whoever else involved in trying to fix whatever has gone wrong continues to make it worse. And now I believe it's worse than it's ever been right now.
Well, I mean, the thing is, when you try to just keep putting Band-Aids or patches on things,
when you say
usually it gets completely out of control and you're nowhere near the original problem appears to be nothing compared to where you are now.
When you say it's worse than ever before, are you talking about disregard for the rules?
No, just everything. Because now you have a salary cap and you still have scholarships and you have a limited number that you're dealing with. Meanwhile, people are still going, hey, we're not worried about that. We're going to continue to act like it's not last summer. At least last summer, you knew there were no rules. Now.
Oh, no. Yeah, last summer, everybody could say, that's it. Oh, yeah, we can whatever much, we can come up with, that's what we can do. Money you got.
So now it's, well, are there rules? Are you going to follow these rules? Are they not really rules yet? And nobody's playing with the same rules.
I think there are a lot of I really wish we knew more of the specifics of the rules. I was asked a question today. I don't know the answer. It was a situation where I was on with Wimp and Barry Sanderson, and they said that Greg Byrne has said, all right, of their $20.5 million of the revenue sharing, they were increasing scholarships by $2.5 million, so that would leave them $18 million. Well, I'm not sure that everybody is looking at it that way, mm-hmm. and then there's obviously the.
I thought the scholarships were fully guaranteed, and then there was $20.5 million.
Well, what Greg Byrne told them was they're going to go $2.5 million more, but that's going to come from the revenue sharing. Well, it seems like that would put them at a disadvantage.
Correct.
To other people that are paying $20.5 million to their athletes, if they only have $18 million that they're doing on top of scholarships, there are just so many questions.
And that's it. The problem is, not only do we have those questions, but they do too, because the bar keeps moving every day, right, depending on who sues who. Because a peek behind the curtain for me. So before I left, I started to do a series of stories on. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of Auburn. I talked to Will Redmond some. I got prepared to do the story for day three, and things had already changed. And so what I had written was like, well, that's not quite true anymore because of what just happened. That's the issue right now. And so
yeah, I think they're sort of learning every day.
They are. And here's the issue now. We can get a little deeper into it. But right now, from my thought, is that Auburn is leaning very conservative from, okay, we're going $20.5 million. We're not going to overpromise from a recruiting standpoint kids, because in December that you may have to pay that, because right now you have what you have.
Well, the other thing is to retain players.
That's the most
isn't
important.
Getting cheaper.
No.
So you have to spend that, and depends on then what do you have after that,
and a young talented roster.
Yes,
that's the biggest part of this right now for Auburn's perspective, and the same thing is going to be true in baseball and basketball.
Right,
where you're going to go, look, the most important recruit you have right now. I'll go to baseball since we just finished. The most important recruit right now for baseball. Chris Rembert, Chase Fraley, Bub Terrell, yep. Andres Alvarez, yep. Eric Guevara, Cade Ballou. Well, same thing in football. You look and go, the most important wide receiver, you can go find any signee, high school wide receiver in the country right now. Is that guy more valuable than Cam Coleman, Malcolm Simmons, Perry Thompson, right. Bryce Kane, Sam Turner? Nope. Probably not.
The non-draft eligible, like true sophomores on the team.
That can go anywhere.
So Jake Crawford.
I looked, and there were 13, I think, seniors that you go, oh, those are 13 scholarship football seniors. Then you have Eric Singleton, Xavier Chaplin, Kay and Lee. There's obviously Keldrick Falk, Connor Liu. There's a group of juniors you go, you might lose those guys
to the NFL. Yeah,
but you're still talking about you have to have a plan in place in case those guys don't make it. Because knock on wood.
Unless you want to see them in the conference.
That's it. Knock on wood, you go, hey, maybe the season wasn't quite as good as they'd hoped. And you go, I'm going to come back as my senior. And you've already promised that money to do a high school recruit. Then what do? Who would you rather have? You'd rather have the older guy who's more experienced. You have to plan to keep your roster intact on the guys you want to keep the next year. And you have, right now, roughly $15 million budget to do that.
Independent of the financials, which I'm sure are fascinating as far as what you can promise and what you can actually give and sort of what's happening behind the scenes. You know, we talked about yesterday when Justin was here. Feels like if you're going to sustain high-level recruiting, you either need to be able to promise immediate playing time or you need to be able to point to on-field success. Like that, I mean, without one of those.
A combination of three: immediate playing time, success on the field, and you better be competitive. You better be competitive money wise.
Exactly.
You can't do that without money.
Exactly. Separating the money from it and thinking about like those other two. Auburn is at this point in sort of a unique and difficult spot because you can't really promise. You can't really promise playing time to a lot of these guys at these positions when you look at the depth chart.
Yeah.
And you haven't won like you need to.
They're waiting on that. And I talked about it this week, too. I said, normally, and in the last 2 years, and it was proven to be true, Auburn's wins and losses did not factor in recruiting first 2 years. It didn't. Because, guys, look, I know that the roster's depleted. Right. I know they're not. This year, it will factor into recruiting.
Mm-hmm. No question.
You go win games, and you look in December, and it'll be different.
Well, everybody, I mean, all the kids know who Auburn has signed the last couple of years. They follow those guys. They're friends with some of them.
And you also, when that happens.
And that's what's been pointed to. It's like, we're going to show it on the field, and now everybody wants to see it on the field.
And if you do win those games, then the guys we just mentioned will go – NFL draft and be selected, and all of a sudden you start to have that turnover, and you open up doors to other potential players, and so it's a win-win literally situation when you start talking about it. But right now, it is you play to win June or play to win December, and I think Auburn is going, hey, they're betting on winning in December.
December's when it counts more.
That's it. And so you can promise what you want to right now, but it might be completely different in December. And I have a feeling it's going to be completely different for a whole lot of folks in December.
Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover with us here in hour number one of the Wednesday Drive. Love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcast. Just search for The Drive with Bill Cameron on your favorite podcasting platform, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center.
So come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 23 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Wednesday. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, Drew at the controls. And again, we'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about, got any questions for Jason, I'll go ahead and yeah, you addressed, I'm sure, a big part of your answer about that. But, I mean, obviously fans concerned over most of the news here the last couple of weeks have been players – heading the other direction, Auburn losing players, flipping to other schools.
Yeah, I think, I think we're going to see more of that than we've ever seen before. And I think a lot of it's going to happen this fall. Some of it started now. And I think some of it is, and you think about it, it's crazy to think about, and that's not at Florida State. Auburn's wide receiver room is much better than Florida State's, and the opportunity for playing time there for a legacy guy that one to sure, me Devin is one Carter, that you, oh, al- yeah, you yeah. always thought, man, that's going to be really difficult. And then Shedarius Tootle committed really early and has continued to look around. And, you know, you look at Georgia's linebacker history and you go, hey, you can understand that a little bit too, even though it's an in-state guy. Again, but it's also June, a long way to December. And I do think this thing is going to play itself out. Auburn is still in on guys. I do think the other part of this one too, we mentioned you have a heavy dose of freshmen and sophomores on this roster, a big group of them. Because of that, this was always going to be a smaller class. So Auburn's not going to go sign 25 guys in this class unless something changes. Now, you may have to if you were, but it right now the plan is for this to be a smaller class. And you look at it, some areas where you go, you're really young, you got guys in the secondary, linebacker, young interior defensive line group. But offensive line-wise, you look and you go, after this wave of guys leaves, you may have to go grab a couple older guys again just to kind of get you to the next group, because you're going to have six guys playing, and heck, all six of them might be gone after this year. You might lose all six of your top offensive linemen in one fell swoop. But I do think there's going to be a little mixture of older, experienced guys from a portal standpoint, smaller class, because you're not going to lose as many players as maybe you normally do in a year. And if you do, it, like I said, it means you won a bunch of games because that will mean guys are going to the NFL. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's every bit of it is counterintuitive to everything we've ever known about recruiting. None of this makes sense when you think about the way recruiting has always been. Because you go, oh, we're just going to go sign a bunch of guys next year. Now you can't do that because of what your roster makeup is from year to year.
Well, projecting what a roster is going to look like after December is a total dice roll, right? Because of so many different factors at play.
And that's what you're having to do right now.
Exactly.
For 2026.
So we sort of, you know, talked about yesterday, like, and I don't think it changes anything about what this team this season can do, like, you know, on the field. Like, you know, what's happening on the recruiting trail between June and August doesn't really matter. If you get the sense that things that, you know, that you don't necessarily have positive momentum on the recruiting trail, if anything, it could intensify that pressure that Hugh Freeze is under to start turning these close competitive games into wins for Auburn in 2025. Because maybe you won't be able to say, well, at least things are going well on the recruiting trail if we're not winning. Not that that would have mattered.
I think that ship has sailed.
Right. Yeah, I don't know that there are many places, if any, that year three close is going to be good.
Yeah, no, I think that pressure
close and
that,
good recruiting.
Well, I think that pressure is already there because you've already shown. Hey, here's the thing: this is the same group that can recruit. To act like now that they can't recruit, there's a reason why, and the reason why is roster development, all the things the roster retention, all the things that are going on, and you go win football games.
If the only job, I mean, I think you guys would agree, like if the job for Hugh Freeze, if the only job was to upgrade the state of the roster from a personnel standpoint, from what he inherited to what he has going into this season, it's hard to give him anything but an A. Yes. If that was the only job.
Yeah.
But it's not, right? Like there are game management, there are other things that the head coach is responsible for other than just the state of the roster from a personnel standpoint, and that's where, you know, that's I think one of the reasons this season is so crucial for him. But the belief that he was going to be able to and turn Auburn into a destination at positions of critical importance, quarterback, receiver, pass rusher, hasn't necessarily happened from the high schoolers with offensive tackle yet, but like it seems like it's, I mean, it seems like he's still gone out and recruited.
Well, they've done what you had to do, which is go get guys.
Exactly.
You have options now on the offensive line. And right now, and here's the thing, you can do it different ways. Right now, they may have 4-5 potential NFL offensive linemen on this roster in that first group. It's been a long time since you can say that about an Auburn football team. We can go back and talk about the history of Auburn draft, and it will bring this show to a screeching halt. But yes, and I said,
Jack Driscoll still plays in the NFL, right? I can go ahead because I know this because I've said it so many times.
You've had two drafted in the first two rounds since Ben Grubbs. Two guys, Greg Robinson, Braden Smith, in the first two rounds since Ben Grubbs, who's been retired for 5 years and played a long time in the NFL.
I wonder how many offensive linemen from Auburn appeared in NFL games in 2024. Like, appeared, like, on the field in the NFL in 2024 to sort of illustrate. Like, I think Driscoll did. I'm pretty sure Jack Driscoll is in Philly, or Miami, maybe he's in Miami.
Yeah, Braden Smith, obviously.
Braden Smith, but it's not a long list.
No,
and
that's it. You look at it and go, the draft in general, Auburn's had good DB drafts. They've had some things, but you got to get more talented players to then in turn get guys to the NFL. This is the best, in my opinion. And there's still holes on this roster, but this is the best roster, in my opinion, for an Auburn team since 2017.
Yeah, I agree. We spent a lot of Monday talking about shoulda. That's what you look at, especially last year. Auburn shoulda, coulda. You shoulda maybe one or two, but yeah. Coulda.
Yeah.
But
and
now
it's time to turn that in. And again, you can go back and rehash
sure.
everything you want to.
You were talking about the offensive line, and it's like, and we had a caller say, does Auburn have a much better offensive line? I said, well, it should be.
Yeah.
I can't say yes until they get out there and do it.
Yeah. We talked a lot yesterday about red zone offense. Like that was if you're looking for trends, especially in the losses last season, it's a failure to convert opportunities in the red zone into touchdowns. Because people could say, well, you missed field goals too. You shouldn't be shooting for field goals in the red zone.
But they still may have made a difference.
They absolutely matter. But when you
two games,
but when
you win two more games if you make two field goals.
But when you kick field goals in the red zone, I mean the defense feels like they held. It feels like a win for the defense.
But that's offensive line to me.
I was going to ask.
It's not play calling. It's none of those things. Because look at Texas. Texas has guys all over the field at every position. When they play somebody really good on defense, you know what happens? They don't score in a red zone. You know why? Because it's all of a sudden you're not as good. You can't overpower teams. That's how you be really good in the red zone. The teams that are really good in the red zone overpower teams in the red zone and win at those spots. When you're not good enough, all of a sudden you have to scheme it up. It's hard to scheme up in a short window of area.
It's tighter.
That's why you have to get better. You have to be better and more talented, more physical. And when you do that, then all of a sudden you become better in the red zone.
I think your quarterbacks
and that helps.
Yeah, quarterback helps. Yeah. I think quarterbacks
that can do special things.
I was thinking processing speed matters more in the red zone than anywhere else, and that's magnified.
Again, and it's people felt like it's not necessarily scheme. It's because again, I go back. Steve Sarkisian is the greatest coach ever when he has better players than the other guy. So is everybody else in the country. That guy's the smartest play caller you'll ever see when he's better than the other team. But when he's not, I'll go back to Nick Saban. Nick Saban's the greatest football coach ever when he had better players, which was most of the time. When he didn't, his record was about like everybody else in games that was decided by 7 points or less.
And Kirby Smart will be the first one to tell you, like, a big part of the job is getting better. A big part of this job is getting better players than the opponent.
Yeah,
like
that's it.
It's different in the NFL because you don't have as much. You're not as influenced as personnel wise, and you're not going to really. It's not realistic to just think we're gonna out talent you at every position in the NFL, and maybe that will become less realistic in college with a. John Cohen used the term level playing field several times in that email, announcing Auburn opting in. And, I think that's the hope is that with – and I know there's –
It'll never be there.
That's –
It'll never happen because right now – again, because I go back to my original point when we first started this. Because now it's well, here's your budget. Well, people aren't abiding by the budget. and they're going, well, we're going to get NIL. Here's your NIL deal for $1 million. Well, how is that guy a true $1 million NIL? He's not. You're not a true $1 million NIL. How many of those do you think there are in the country right now in college football?
Do you think the clearinghouses are going to have spokespeople? Like, do you think we'll be able to like
explain?
Like, do you think we'll be able to reach out to like a press?
I want to hear this one's turned down or that one,
and the reason why.
And they're run by the conference, so I guess file this away for media days.
I got a feeling you're not going to hear any of it.
Oh, I'm going to ask it. I'm going to ask about clearinghouse procedure.
How do you
media days?
Yeah,
for sure.
How do you determine what's your process for determining whether somebody's worth $500,000 or not?
It's a legitimate name, image, and likeness. Deal. It's not just pay.
They've got the BCS people working on some algorithms and some formulas to calculate market value.
I just don't know how in reality this is going to make any
sense. I'll tell you what. If there is a media contact or a point person for the conference run clearinghouse, they should come to media days, because I feel like people would have questions about clearinghouse procedure would like, well, if there's a, you know, if because I would imagine you get a response from somebody.
You really think they're going to be that transparent?
I would say any peek behind the curtain would be great.
Yes,
but they're not going to do it.
Yeah,
no, I can't.
And they should. Yeah. But again, they should have done a lot of things, and they didn't do it.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Drive. 20 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, and let's get to the Drive hotline. And Spectre is up first. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
Hey, bud.
Spectre, doing good.
Jason, you know, you're talking, my stuff is you're talking offensive line. You're right about what you said. I mean, an average offensive line can take a team up and down the field until they get to the red zone. But you know you have a damn good offensive line when you can punch it in from the 20.
Yep.
You know, that's where Auburn has been lacking for the last several years, is that ability to produce in the red zone. And I've been preaching this for a long time, and I'm preaching it on deaf ears when I'm talking about the offensive line. It seems like we get all the good receivers and running backs and quarterbacks, but we just can't seem to get all the good offensive line. But like we talked about yesterday, that I heard about this offensive line we got now, and we should be able to do it. You know, another thing, this new recruit that we got from
New Zealand.
Where's he from?
Yeah, New Zealand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, is he just a?
He is a project.
300-pound piece of meat. Or
he has a background in rugby and Aussie rules football, so he's an athlete.
I saw him in person at camp, and he is extremely athletic for a guy that's 6'7", 370 pounds.
He started playing American football 6 months ago, and he's almost assuredly a guy who's going to redshirt his first year in America just because of his lack of experience.
I think this is the thing that coaches at Auburn haven't done in the past, which is go, hey, we need to sign guys that have the potential to be good, because, I mean, how many times – I'm going to go two names. I'm going to go Leon Hart and Calvin Ashley. That's the only two five-star offensive linemen I can remember Auburn signed. Neither one of them produced. You better sign as many offensive linemen as you can, because there's no guarantee even the highest-rated one is going to be good. Because, you know, and Spectre, I know you're right, too, signing the good ones. I can guarantee you that I'll go look in Georgia and Alabama. They've produced a lot of good ones. I bet you they missed on just as many. Because they had a lot more of them. So you got to give yourself as many options as you can on the offensive line. They didn't do that in the past, and I think they're doing that. They're doing that now.
Yeah, you're right about that. You got to produce them. Produce them is when you get that five-star recruit in here, and he's got the ability to do what he should do. But if you don't develop him correctly, if you don't have the good offensive line coach,
What I'm saying is, Alabama has missed on as many five stars too, but when you have, and Georgia. But when you have four or five of those guys a year, nobody makes any difference about the ones that didn't make it.
And when you have a track record of sending guys to the NFL, it's easier to continue.
You only get one and the guy misses, people go, well, they didn't develop a bunch of guys either. Like Alabama has played a transfer on the offensive line, each of the last 3 or 4 years after signing boatloads of five-star guys that didn't make it.
And I believe there's a relatively new NFL program for teenagers in Australia and New Zealand. I would think that Heppy could be the first of a lot of guys. We've seen punters and kickers.
I think we're going to see some other athletes, but this guy is
I compared him to a lottery ticket earlier in the week, Spectre, where if you hit it, could be the jackpot.
Yeah, I wrote a little bit about him today, and there's a guy that's very similar, Daniel Falele, who, if you remember when Auburn played Minnesota in a bowl game, he was the 6'9", 400-pound offensive lineman. He was from Australia. He was the first one of those guys. Came and played at IMG Academy for a year, but he's now started in the NFL for 4 years. And so I think this guy has some unique tools and skill sets that is this worth taking a look at for sure for Auburn.
Well, I tell you what, if any of you guys ever played rugby, if this guy's got rugby experience, he's going to be moving some people. There's no doubt about that.
He can move. That's the thing. When I saw him in person, the first thing I saw was, when I saw him, I went, golly, that guy does not look like he weighs 370 pounds. He looks like he weighs about 330. And then you look at him move, and you go, well, he can really move. And then he's not – he's obviously big, but this is not – like fat guy. This is just a big kid.
You're talking about somebody that's thick.
Yeah, thick at the thigh. long arms. So I think he's going to be a really fun guy to see how he develops here in the next couple of years.
Yeah, but I mean, be patient. Again, new to the sport, but you know the possibility. I said yesterday, I had a coach tell me a long time ago, Jason, that if you had two guys who were the same age, same height, same weight, same build, roughly the same level of talent, and one of them's been playing the sport 6 months and one of them's been playing the sport 6 years. Most coaches will say, give me the one who's been playing the sport 6 months, because imagine what happens when he gains the experience of the other guy.
Yep.
And I look at someone like this, and yeah, there's absolutely the possibility of something, of this really paying dividends down the road. But be patient, because you know, he's got a lot to learn before he gets on the field.
Yeah, that's why it's so important that these coaches look at these high school recruits versus people coming out of the portal and things like that. There's nothing wrong with people coming out of portal, but what I'm saying is what you just mentioned. You want to take that guy that's got less experience than the guy coming out of the portal so you can develop him the way you want him to play.
Yeah, and that's why you have to get to that point.
Right.
Because they weren't afforded that option the last 2 years because there were none here. So you weren't going to be able to develop a guy. You had to find guys that could play. And so you've had a little bit of those things in both situations.
Great stuff, Spectre. Really appreciate it.
334-321-1390. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Clay, you're up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final segment of hour number one here on this Wednesday. Let's get right back to The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Clay is up next. Hey, Clay.
Hey, guys. I'm just tuning in. I've just got one real quick thing I wanted to ask you. Now, what's the guy we're talking about? The big old dude.
Yes, his name
is signed today.
A commitment from his name is. It says it looks like Nikau, but it's Nico.
Nico Heppy, right?
Nico Heppy. Yeah.
Nico Heppy.
Heppy, yep.
You know what? I saw an article about Nico Heppy today, believe it or not, and he's fixing to get married. Do you know what his wife's name is?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
All right. Look, hit us.
Now, I'm you think I'm making this up?
Oh, well, I don't know yet. I'm just trying to prepare myself.
Yeah.
But listen. I'm not going to break any FCC rules. His name is what now? Nico
Heppy.
Heppy. Okay. So do you know what his wife's name is going to be?
No.
Mrs. Heppy.
Mississippi. All right, I got you. That was worth it. That was a long.
Okay, I was worried.
That's funny.
That's worth it,
Clay. We only have a little bit of time with Jason every week.
That's right,
Clay. Thank you for thank you for using up a lot of it on the Mississippi joke.
No, man, that was good.
No, I did like that. Right. That's outstanding work.
Hey, a couple of things. All right, so we mentioned that in the NBA draft tonight.
Yeah, if there's a list. I mean, I know it's on TV at some point, but I haven't heard like two words about it. Of course, I don't watch ESPN. Well,
there's not a ton of intrigue because of Cooper Flagg. Part of it. There's not a ton of intrigue as far as who's going to be the first pick. It's been Cooper Flagg for a long time. Do you have thoughts on several SEC players who look like they could factor in? I think I would guess Jeremiah Fears is your first SEC player off the board. Maybe Trey Johnson. It's probably a battle between those two.
Yeah.
Colin Murray Boyles looks like he's a lottery pick. Aza Newell, Walter Clayton, I think are both also and looking then, like they're going to go in the top 20.
Obviously guys that Auburn saw last year. When you look at the Duke guys,
yeah,
I mean, Con Knepel's going to be in there as well. Maybe the big two. Danny Wolf looks like a first rounder who Auburn saw each of the last 2 years.
I've seen Kalkbrenner. I've seen people thinking that the Creighton big could be a first round pick. Jace Richardson
is going to be back end. I think him and Walter Clayton are both probably 20s, probably something like that. Yeah, I mean there's going to be a lot of familiar names. It doesn't feel like nearly as much of a foreign impact in this draft maybe as there have been in the past. I think there's going to be a lot of familiar names. There'll be some of those guys, but yeah, Kalkbrenner in there.
If I were a team, if my team were sort of directionless and they came away with Jeremiah Fears, I'd be excited because of how
I think Trey Johnson is a superstar. Yeah. I think Fears is good too. I think Johnson has a little bit more length from Texas, and so both are guys that I think have the ability to go do it. Man, the Dylan Harper one would scare me a little bit, even though he's really talented.
Mm-hmm. He sounds like a consensus number two for the Spurs.
Yeah, top four, for sure.
The Ace Bailey one is really odd to me, and I guess is it true that it's Sharif's dad is part of the management team? I know that's been talked about,
yeah,
but
I'm not really sure.
But the I guess the reports that he sounds Charlotte and Salt Lake, Charlotte and Utah pick in spots where one would think they might consider Ace Bailey 4 and 5. Sounds like he's more interested in going a little bit later in the draft to
Wizards.
A team like Washington or Brooklyn or Toronto. Maybe part of that is the media market, the media size, and some of that stuff. You know, I don't know how much of it has to do with the organizations themselves, but you don't really see guys angling to go later in the lottery very often.
No,
and I think that's kind of like the notion that a guy would tell the team picking 4th or 5th.
But
I'm not terribly interested in talking to you right now is unusual for an NBA draft player.
Do you know what, though, is what bothers me about this? I'm kind of looking down this and thinking about the college game because we talk college. I love college basketball. But Cooper Flagg, freshman. Dylan Harper, freshman.
Ace Bailey.
VJ Edgecombe, freshman from Baylor. Trey Johnson, freshman. Jeremiah Fears, freshman. Ace Bailey, freshman. Kamen Malawat, freshman. Con Knepel, freshman. Derek Queen, freshman. Carter Bryant, freshman. Colin Murboys is a sophomore, but big kid from BYU is a freshman. Thomas Sorbet, Georgetown, is a freshman. Just seeing Illinois big man from Lithuania is a freshman. Just seeing that and going, I understand it, but those guys aren't going to all make an impact in the NBA year one, but they've drafted so many young guys over the years that now it just you open it up because there's not older guys that get drafted anymore, and so it just continues to me it takes away from the continuity and
what continuity there is.
But at least you know the guy.
Right.
Now you don't even know the player.
And you're also, keep in mind, these guys are sort of forced into college basketball because they can't declare for the NBA draft out of high school.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder how many of those guys you just named would have played college basketball at all if they were allowed to go pro right out of high school. And I feel like the one and done thing's almost a compromise.
Yeah,
because players can't go right out of high school.
But even then, like, there were some guys that did that and did it well. Most, I would say, the large percentage of people that did that washed out pretty quickly.
Cautionary tales. Yeah.
Yes.
Jason, I hate that we've run out of time because I saw the sad news. Saw Philip writing a story about John Pruitt passing away.
And me and Philip talked last night.
What a great person.
One of the best human beings. Yes. I hate that people never had a chance. If you never had a chance to talk to him, sit down with him, one of the best human beings ever. And unfortunately, it's the life we live. Sooner or later, it's going to go. But, man, he lived a great life, and he left a lot of legacy. So I hate to hear that
No question about it. All right, Jason, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you guys have got going.
Yep, check us out at AuburnUndercover.com, part of the 24/7 network. Got a lot of things coming. Just to kind of keep it tuned the next couple of days. We got some things coming that I think people are going to enjoy.
All right, that's hour number one. We're back with the second hour of the show. Stick with us.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining us in hour number one. Yeah, time flies. You know, there were a couple of other things wanted to talk about with Jason, but, you know, we just ran out of time there in hour number one.
I resolved, you know, when I came into the studio, I resolved we were going to talk to Jason about the College World Series, the LSU Coastal Carolina game, because he's only in the top 1% or so of knowledgeability when it comes to college baseball.
You're absolutely right about that.
And you know, would have loved his thoughts on the series itself, and also the showdown between the ump and the coach on Saturday and or on Sunday in game two. But well, you know, we've got time to talk about that and a whole lot more with Jason in the weeks and months to come. Because not playing football for a few weeks. And Jason, always great to visit with him about, you know, whether it's the temperature of the recruiting.
Yeah, and what everybody right now. I get, you know, don't you feel like that's the buzz right now? It's like, what's going on with recruiting? And I think Jason brought up some great points, and he said some of the same things that I've heard about Auburn being cautious, not wanting to overpromise. And I mean, because right now you can promise whatever. You're not having to write that check yet.
I still. And I, you know, I'm curious about how much of this is driven by financials. How much of this is economically driven.
I think more than some people would. I think some people feel like it's all because Auburn hasn't produced on the field or concern about Hugh Freeze being the coach long term.
See, my immediate, and I think those are probably valid reasons, but I immediately went to the combination of what are you selling on the recruiting trail right now? You can't sell playing time, and you can't sell look at how we've won.
You can't. I don't know. I wouldn't say that you can't sell playing time. If you say, I mean, that would be like saying, well, Nick Saban and Kirby Smart can't sell plays, but they still get those classes.
And they could point to all of the success I think that's the difference, is that
Texas A&M did it with Jimbo Fisher for 3 years.
That's the thing, is that did they sustain?
They were top 10 for
three straight classes.
Number one class.
And I think people immediately thought that was largely financial driven, right? Well, wasn't that the argument
if
with...
You don't think a lot of recruiting now is financially
driven. Oh, sure it is.
Then you're missing out.
It absolutely is, but I think that you also have to wonder. Maybe Auburn has stopped competing from an economic standpoint, but I think that's It feels unlikely when you look at the rosters that they have in a couple of sports.
Yeah, but see, that's what Jason was saying, though.
The rules have changed.
The money is invested in the players that are on the roster right now, and you're doing everything you can to retain them. What does that leave you to offer, you know, newcomers?
I mean, I think it would probably be a mistake to write off the lack of on-field success the last two years. As part of it.
I think it is all they're all factors.
Yes,
but I think that a much larger factor than some people might think is the financial factor, because I think a lot of people for a year or so were just going, "Oh, those numbers are ridiculous. Nobody's getting that kind of money." And look, I haven't seen the bank accounts of any of the players. I don't know what they've gotten, but I think after a while I started believing that, yeah, a lot of these players are making more money than I could ever dream of.
Well, I think that but even then, like Auburn would be in a similar boat as a lot of teams as far as retaining their current rosters, right?
Yes, if those other teams are not promising more than they could actually deliver. And see, that's one of the things I don't know. I mean, like we were talking, how the money is being accounted for. All right, so you have this much for this year. Does it stop? When does it stop? Do you count your midterm enrollees toward next year? Do they count toward this year? I think I know I've had a couple of people tell me that certain schools are assuming that everybody in December counts toward the 2026-27 class. Doesn't count on this year. They're not approaching it that way. So they're thinking, all right, anybody who won't be back next year, we don't have to worry about them in the second part, in the second semester. We won't be double paying anybody because that's money for the future.
Yeah, my thinking would be that on July 1st, right, you've got $20.5 million,
right,
and you've got a roster of.
You have $20.5 million, and you have however many hundred athletes.
And they are all slated to participate in the 2025-2026 academic year, mm-hmm, in their sport. I'm thinking that's where you're spending the $20.5 million, is on those athletes.
All right, so you think that, then are we budgeting $21.5 million because it's supposedly going up to $30 million in year 10 of this agreement. So you've got $21.5 million that you're spending for anyone who is not participating but is coming in. That's not how I'm hearing that Auburn is looking at it.
But I would just based on our understanding of the rules, I would think that you would say, all right,
and so that's what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Here we are, we're two guys that have pretty much heard the same things, and there are different ways of interpreting this. I've heard that Auburn is being very conservative, not wanting to promise more than they would have, where other schools are looking at it from what you were talking about, going, hey, that's next year's money. They don't have to worry about that. So we've got more to be spending, more to be offering.
As far as when you're talking about making promises on the recruiting trail,
yes,
for guys that would,
yes,
be. Yeah, I mean, I would think that the money you're promising someone on the recruiting trail who is going to join your school in January 2026,
uh-huh,
and participate in the fall of 26.
26-27 academic year.
I would think you're budgeting from the July 2026 revenue sharing money when you're
I have heard that some schools, quite a few schools, feel like that's absolutely not what they understand.
All right, I would be.
So that would make a big difference
because they wouldn't be receiving any of the revenue sharing money until July of 2026.
So all they can get is scholarship money if they enroll early
and NIL.
I think they
start getting revenue sharing money when they put the pads on in August of 26.
See,
that's what I would think.
All right. I have read some players talking about what they're going to be getting when they step on campus.
Sure.
And I don't think they're thinking it's just NIL. They're thinking they're getting some of that revenue sharing money.
I would think. I mean, and maybe you've got signing bonuses. Maybe you've got money in place there. I would just think, like, based on what we've been told about the, you know, how they're doing this, I would think that's how schools are going to sort of budget this. But this is all You know, I mean, we're you know, it's fantasy sports in a lot of ways, and it does seem to be like I would be surprised if Auburn, just I think because of the rosters, like we said, the rosters they've assembled right now and their willingness to push the envelope on NIL and stay competitive in football and men's basketball the last couple of years, I would be surprised if you suddenly saw a situation where Auburn wasn't competing on the recruiting trail in football and men's basketball with the rest of the league for financial reasons. If that happens, I wonder how long the decision makers get to decide, you know, what you're willing to do to compete.
Yeah, but anyway, so that was great having Jason with us. If you missed any of Jason Caldwell or any of the drive, they are archived, so you can listen to some back shows as well as earlier today. Each show is posted shortly after the conclusion of the show. So check out our podcast.
Yeah, podcast The Drive presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They do a great job. Really appreciate making the podcast available. You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box. So if you don't budget it that way, if you do it some other way, how do you handle?
That's a good question. You have to keep some. See, that's what I have heard. That some schools, and including Auburn, are feeling like they need to keep some in reserve.
Sure. And I would wonder if you budget the $20.5 million and sort of use the NIL money as the cash reserves to bolster that. And that's where I would think the easiest way to budget the revenue sharing money would be to do it.
Here it is. We've got this many. Here's what you've got for the year. Boom.
Yes, period. and then
that would be, but that's again.
But that doesn't factor
it's
in.
More complicated than that.
It doesn't factor in making promises to recruits who could show up in January. I think that's the crucial thing.
Right.
Is that when you're talking about
portal and signees?
Yes, like you're going to need that if they're going to expect money immediately before the season starts.
Right.
That money's going to need to come from somewhere, and if you've already paid your entire revenue sharing amount.
I mean, you know, we've talked about what each room might be worth, you know, on each team, the quarterback room and the projected starting quarterback. If you're in the market for a starting quarterback in the transfer portal, I'd say they'll be much more likely to go somewhere where they're going to be getting substantial their portion from the revenue sharing immediately.
Yeah, if your athletic department is like. You know when Bugs Bunny used to
hold off a quarter, or Wimpy.
Wimpy, of course. Well, I was going to say I was going with a different cartoon, right? Remember when Bugs Bunny used to open his wallet and the flies would come out? That's a Marx Brothers deal, you're not going to compete at. We just said, you know, with Jason, that even like not painting over the fact that the win-loss record, I think especially last year, wasn't where a lot of folks thought it should be. Mm-hmm. Like, not excusing that, but the fact is, if the job is just turning over the roster into something far more competitive, like if the job is
that is probably that is your priority early on.
If it is
to improve the roster, but the ultimate goal has to be to improve the competitiveness and compete for championships.
Right, and I think the argument for Hugh Freeze from folks when Auburn had a job opening was that Hugh Freeze would be able to not just build the roster into something that can compete with Alabama and Georgia consistently and contend for the SEC championship, but also he would go out there and win those games once he had that roster. You know, the roster is in a much better place than when
no question about that
when Freeze stepped up. It's just it's it's time to actually turn that into something on the field that you can then show to future recruits.
Oh, no doubt about it. We'd love for you to join and give us your thoughts on that. Anything that you'd like to talk about sports-wise here in hour number two of the show. And the second hour is brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at theorthoclinic.com. You can call us on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and that number is 334-321 1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive Text Box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Give them a call, 334-209-6355, to learn more about their skilled trade positions.
We'll be right back. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Hey, we have a special, one of our regular weekly guests who wasn't with us yesterday, going to be on this afternoon at 5:30.
That's right. Jake Crane, rescheduling from yesterday, and he's got some traveling this weekend, so we're going to have him on Friday, but might rerun the segment depending on what happens on Friday's show. But happy to talk to Jake in about 10 minutes or so at the bottom of the hour.
But until then, phone lines are open, and let's get to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390, and Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. Okay, I want to go into a topic that y'all are kind of tipping around. And in my mind, it opens a bigger story from what I've just always kind of wondered, since you understand the university, how it works. Okay, so to me, I look at a business from a perspective of, okay, you're Auburn University. You are an academic institution where you've got 30,000 students, and they come to school to teach them. They pay their tuition, and then you offer them, Auburn does, schools like Florida, everybody, they offer, you know, athletics, which to me is like a benefit because you're giving the students something fun to do, something entertaining to make their time in college, you know, more enjoyable, more worth it. So I feel like some people pick Auburn or Alabama because of football or because of...
Oh, there's no question about that.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're a university... And I'm just calculating up. It's 13,000 for in-state and 35,000 for out-of-state. So if you figure that's anywhere between, if you took two semesters a year, you're talking about anywhere between $30,000 and $70,000 a year that the university is making per student. And if you multiply that by 30,000 students, let's say an average of say 50,000 times 30,000 students, that's $1.5 billion. And I know, just using my logical is what I can, but there's no way that the cost of running a university is $1.5 billion. So when you're talking about this $20 million, and Auburn's playing it conservative, and you say, okay, well, you know, we don't want to spend the money, $20 million, you know, because, you know, we don't want to get caught or whatever. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, these schools have, you know, like they talk about Stanford has like $9 billion or $53 billion in endowment. What is the purpose of just hoarding up all this money when and then you let your entertainment for your students, which is what a vital pipeline to get good students that, you know, well-rounded students that are smart and they like to have fun. It just seems to me that it's like a drop in the bucket for the university. But can you not intermingle? Can the university not decide, hey, look, you know what? We've got, you know, $3 billion, you know, and we're making $1 billion a year. You know, we could afford to spend $25 million on our sports because it's like.
So the premise, I'm going to jump in here, the only thing I'm going to disagree with is I don't think Auburn is saying they don't have the money for the $20.5 million in revenue sharing. I don't think we're saying Auburn doesn't have the money. Auburn has the money to spend $20.5 million in revenue sharing. I think most teams, and that's without getting into the into the cash reserves, right, into the endowment and things like that. I think that's just based on what Auburn's athletic department brings in from the media share, you know, from the media rights deal and from ticket sales and from, like, I think they get pretty close to where they can absorb a $20.5 million. You've asked previously why that number isn't higher. Why it isn't more than $20.5 million in revenue sharing that schools can give to the athletes directly. And I think that number is a compromise because there are some athletic departments out there playing Division I sports and even Division I football that probably can't spend a lot more than that and have it make economic sense for their athletic departments. But then you get into you know, the Ohio States and the Texases and the USCs and Alabama and Georgia and some of the super heavyweights out there, they'd be happy with that number being higher than $20.5 million because they could afford it,
right?
And they'd be fine with it. And I think Auburn's probably closer to the haves than the have-nots in this situation. But no,
there are certain members that conferences and other schools have wanted to stay with them and to keep them there. They have agreed to a lower number,
But I don't think it's a matter of Auburn not having the money.
No. That's not the primary factor. No,
I guess my question is academic money allowed to be spent on whatever it wants to be spent on? In other words, I guess I can understand. You know, you want to have money saved up to where you put it in the bank or whatever, and you take the interest and you just live off the interest. And you don't ever have to go there. I get that, but I just don't. I just don't see how it could cost Auburn University, you know, $1.4 billion there has to be extra money.
I got something for you, and this is from a source that knows what they're talking about. Auburn's total budget for 2025, the fiscal year, is $1.85 billion.
That was
the budget.
So isn't it worth it if you're the university and you could say, hey, Auburn, you know, we want it. We want to have national championships. We want it. We want to hang banners. We remember those years when we won it all. And then it draws in better quality students. To me, it just seems like why would Auburn not look at it like a business, like having great athletics?
Okay, so Pat, I'm going to say,
Auburn.
Hey Pat, I agree with you about the framing of, I think more schools should view investing in the athletic department not as, oh, does this athletic department, does it generate a profit? Does it turn
exactly,
like, do the, I don't think they should look at it that way. I think you should look at it as an extension of the marketing department. Because
imagine
the value. Think about the schools you've never heard of until they make a Sweet 16 run in NCAA men's basketball, and the amount that airtime is worth. Troy played a men's basketball game on CBS on Friday night against Kentucky because they made the NCAA tournament. How many people heard about Troy or learned about Troy for the first time during that game, watching them play against Kentucky in the NCAA tournament? I think that's the value of investing in an athletic department, more so than, well, how many tickets did you sell last year? How many what's the merch, you know, on the basketball game or things like that? And I think that's a big picture look that I absolutely think is better for the industry, and I think people should sort of take a viewpoint that way. I don't know as far as like allocating more. I mean, the $20.5 million feels like a cap that they're trying to instill. You can invest money elsewhere. Facilities, support staff. Like, there are other ways other than direct compensation of the athletes where you can invest this money if you really want to compete, in every sport. And I think, it's going to be more of an arms race than ever before with Texas and Oklahoma joining the fray in the SEC.
It seems like we're increasing our tuition. I mean, our enrollment every year, trying to get maybe up to, you know, not to Alabama maybe, but trying to get 40 or 50, whatever. And it's so it just seems logical. You're going to be up to $3 billion. I mean, how much money do you need to hoard up in the bank, you know, extra for when it's like, wow, if we had a great football team and instead of everybody being complaining and like, oh, I'm not going to go, it's like, oh, this sucks. You know, it just seems like it's better for the whole university, the students, the fans, for everybody, if our athletics department was good. And so, hey, you know, this quarterback, to get this quarterback is an extra $1 million. And you go, no, we're not going to do that. We can't do that. And we don't have enough people donating money. But we're going to keep the billion in the bank, you know, just in case one day. I get the concept, but to me, like, I agree with what you said, Dan. It's look at it as an investment in your students and your fan base that it's going to come back.
It's also really easy when it's somebody else's money.
Sure.
Until millions are spent and you don't win it all, then you feel like, hey, what are we wasting all these millions for?
Sure, but what are you going to do? Just keep it in the bank? And so maybe in 2055, maybe something like, you know, I guess to me, I can understand if we weren't making, if we were just barely covering our expenses at Auburn. But I just feel like, it's like I just feel like there's money there, and it's like, and I think when you try to make every sport's got to balance itself, or else we got to cut it. It just seems like that's you're short-sighting yourself. A fan going and having a great year in Auburn, and then they talk about it to their grandchildren. I mean, it's just good for the school in general to have memories. And I feel like if you're just going to not use your money, to me, it's not, you're not talking about a lot of money. You're talking about, to me, $10 extra million to throw it into the sports so we can have a better basketball and better baseball. To me, is a drop in the bucket when you're talking about $1.8 billion. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's where I guess what my question is.
Well, I think that's the reason there's a cap, is because for some schools it's a drop in the bucket to spend an extra $20-something million or $30 million, and for other schools they say, wait a minute,
they don't have that bucket.
You're gonna get the lights
had a hole in it a long time.
Get the lights cut off at some mid major. Yep. You know what I mean? So that's where the compromise of $20.5 million started. And I wouldn't be surprised. It's like, look at the NBA salary cap 20 years ago and look at it now. That number could skyrocket if Texas and Oklahoma and Ohio State say, hey, we 20 and a half is too low. We've got five times that money we could spend on student athletes and still do just fine as a school. If enough schools start talking like that, then that $20.5 million could be, you know, it could be
50 quick,
or even higher than that. It could multiply.
Yeah, I got you. Okay, thanks, guys.
Appreciate the call, Pat. 334-321-1390.
You think Texas or Ohio State would blink an eye if that revenue sharing number was $50 million instead of 20?
No.
You think they'd hit the cap?
Sure.
You think they'd hit the?
Yeah, I think they would.
I mean, they could spend that on in a lot. Yeah, I think
they'd be able to fund every sport they wanted. They wanted to compete in.
And then if Texas does it, Oklahoma would do it. Yep. And if Ohio State A&M. Did it. If Ohio State did it, Michigan would do it, and then on.
And that's
what it would cost then.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Don't forget Jake Crane of Crane & Company going to join us on the other side. So stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here with Drew at the controls. And we're going to head to the phones. He's usually with us on Tuesdays. We're moving some things around here as we get ready for the fourth. And oh, by the way,
a little three-card Monty with the guests.
Let's let folks know that next week,
hide the peanut.
We will have shows Monday through Wednesday. But management has been kind enough to say we can have Thursday and Friday off next week. So, yeah, we've been moving some things around, but we're very pleased to be joined here at the bottom of this hour by our good friend from Crane & Company, and that's Jake Crane. Hey, Jake, how's it going?
Guys, it's going fantastic, as usual. Appreciate y'all having me on. Hope everybody is staying a little cool out there. I'm sure it's almost as hot there as it is here, and I cut the grass earlier, and I think I lost about 10 pounds.
I thought about doing some yard work, and then by the time I ran a couple of errands, it was getting too close to midday, and I thought, no.
I thought about doing some yard work once.
Yeah, and then you thought better, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely scalding here, man. It's about as hot as I can remember it, but that means we're getting closer to fall. That's the way I look at it.
Jake, before we get into the NBA draft and you know, a lot of SEC names that could be called tonight in the first round, love to get your thoughts on the two outstanding baseball games we got this weekend in Omaha between LSU and Coastal. The showdown in the first inning of Game 2 seems to have sort of overshadowed things a little bit. But that game that game Saturday night felt like a heavyweight title fight, where every pitch had incredible importance, and LSU was able to pull away a little bit in game two. I mean, it wasn't like either of them were blowouts, but just in general, like what a postseason, and LSU your champion over Coastal.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I'm just glad that pitching and defense is obviously still a huge part of the game, and that's what won it for LSU. I mean, mm-hmm. you give up a total of 1.5 runs a game in 2 games, and it's not like they blew the balls out of the scoreboard either. They scored 6, you know, got that 1 run early in the first game, and then it was just Flukey and Cade Anderson going back and forth, and obviously Auburn fans got to see Flukey and Morrison up close and personal, and Coastal's for real. I was just... the most impressive part about it for LSU to me was, one, them keeping their poise and their composure, and Jay Johnson even talked about it during the dugout interview when all that stuff went on in game 2. But the ability for LSU, and we talk about this in all sports, and it's true as well in baseball, is the teams that win the most and the biggest can win the most ways. You know, if LSU got into a high-scoring game, they could win a game 10-9. They could win a game 1-0. And I thought, you know, as good as Flukey was, Cade Anderson, I mean, all the postseason, but especially his last 2 starts, was just fantastic, and I would not be surprised at all if he was the number 1 overall pick in the draft. And I think now, guys, I know USC has 12 national championships, hadn't won one since 98. LSU wins 4 in the 90s. Now they've got 4 more since the turn of the millennium. LSU's the face of college baseball. They're the best program in college baseball, and they're going to be really good again next year. And if you're Auburn, you got to start getting some power pitching, man. I thought they overachieved this year, and it was an incredible job by Butch Thompson. But we got our ace, as good as Dutton was. We need guys throwing 96-98. We got to go get those guys, or you're not going to win it.
No, I agree with you there. That's I was talking to some folks earlier today, and Auburn needing that eight. I mean that true dominant presence there on the mound, and they've got a couple of arms. That it's going to be really interesting to see if they do come through, but yeah, I think that's about the only thing they're short. They have a really good nucleus coming back.
I saw a guy on the Brewers throwing 102.4 today against the Pirates. So my idea of what a power pitcher is these days is a little bit skewed now, yeah, right?
It's not 95 anymore. I can tell you that.
No, well, and guys, I got asked today. I went on another radio show and they asked, "Hey, man, why are these guys like old boy from Tennessee who didn't even spend a year in the minors, gets called up, hits the game-tying home run and a walk-off in his first game. You know, how are these guys going through the minors so quickly now as opposed to the past?" Well, I think it's an ode to how good the pitching is in college baseball. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, Major League Baseball, the pitching is better, but these guys aren't shocked anymore when they get in the box and a guy's throwing 98-100 with a 92-mile-per-hour slider. It just shows you how far along the college baseball game has come, especially on the mound. I mean, when you got guys from Coastal that are sitting there at 95-97 and 93-95, it's just amazing how far college baseball has come. And I think you're seeing that in the ratings, too. It's a quality product, and I'm excited to see how much more it grows, especially now that you can bet on it.
Some of that's due to NIL extending careers, too, right? I think in men's basketball and baseball, we're seeing guys who would have left for professional opportunities a lot earlier in their careers, that now it makes financial sense to stay in college basketball or college baseball longer than ever before, or even play college baseball. Like some of these guys would have gone pro right out of high school, or they would have played, 1 year at Chipola, and then they would have gone pro instead of coming to the SEC. And I think the benefit is now you're getting more. I mean, it was obvious in men's basketball this past year, right? Like these rosters were more talented than. I mean, there were multiple schools that had their most talented roster in program history, and then you look and the SEC's got 13 baseball teams in the postseason too.
Yeah. Well, the funny part to me is, that especially talking about college basketball, with all the one and done stuff that we went through before NIL, all the old school people were like, man, it's watering down the tournament. You know, these guys, these teams, the quality of play isn't great because they're not older. And it's funny because they're the same ones that complain about NIL, but NIL is what's making guys in the tournament be older and helping the quality of play in college basketball. And you bring up a great point for college baseball. What guys used to do, and a lot of guys I played with, if they'd either go into the draft, or they would say, I'm going to go to a year at JUCO where I can take steroids and they don't test me, and then I'll go into the draft. So it's amazing the old school style of quality of play that the new school of NIL has brought in the world.
Jake is I mean, this is getting off topic just a little bit, but I mean, we've been talking an awful lot about the salary caps and how that's affecting certain things. Do you think NIL is going to be able to be as big a factor with the supposed clear? I mean, with all the deals supposedly being checked by the new clearinghouse?
Well, you know, again, the rule is that if you have an NIL deal that is going through the school that is over $600, it's going to get checked by the new clearinghouse, and they're going to make sure it matches market value, which to me is nuts because, you know, you're worth what somebody's willing to pay you, and market value can change in a split second. For example, Jackson Arnold, whatever his market value is right now, if he goes out and throws five touchdowns and runs for two more against Baylor, his market value is going to change overnight. So I don't really know how they expect to enforce the market value aspect of this when it's such a moving target all the time. As far as the salary cap that's going to increase incrementally over 10 years, the teams that can make the most money are obviously going to benefit from it because they can reach that cap. What I'm worried about is still with no collective bargaining, it opens the door for litigation regardless, unless there is some congressional antitrust exemption or whatever, which is going to take forever for them to do. It takes them forever to pick out what napkins they're going to have at the next, you know, political barbecue. So I'm glad that we have some rules, but there's still a lot of holes in it, Bill. And I just, the judging the market value part, and then that doesn't count. If, let's say, Jackson Arnold wants to do a deal with an outside entity, that doesn't go towards that. So it's just, it's very convoluted to me.
So my understanding is that if Jackson Arnold enters into a deal with an outside entity and receives more than $600, he is obligated to tell the school, and the school's obligated to tell the clearinghouse, and if the clearinghouse says no, Jackson Arnold can't do that supposed deal. I'm so interested in this conference-run clearinghouse. I said earlier, Jake, and I would hope you agree, if there is a spokesperson or a media contact or someone representing, because we learned from the NCAA that these clearinghouses are conference run. The conferences are expected to run their own clearinghouses, and I would be very interested to know from the SEC if they would be willing to bring someone representing the clearinghouse to media days to answer some of these questions, because I am fascinated by how that's going to, you know, the enforcement of the market value, and making sure that it's endorsement and not inducement. I think that is a really interesting part of this revenue sharing era.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would love full transparency, Dan, but I think we both know the odds of that happening are pretty low. But I'm pretty sure, and again, there's so much that goes on to this, I may be wrong. But if an outside entity that is not a officially with the school, they can pay a player whatever they want, and regardless of the amount, that market value doesn't kick in. So if Jackson Arnold wanted to do a deal with Pizza Hut, and it was just between Jackson Arnold's people and Pizza Hut, I don't think it goes to that clearinghouse.
And that is one of the things we were talking about.
I think that's the $600. I think that's the $600 thing.
I think some people feel very strongly that that's the case. Others are on Dan's side. And, it went further. We were talking about with Jason Caldwell in the first hour that, Auburn is being very conservative with their money because they're feeling that $20.5 million is what they have sunk into players who are already, on teams to compete for this upcoming year. I've talked to other people that feel like they need to you better have some extras of the revenue sharing money for players that either transfer in or are midterm signees. There are just so many questions that we don't have, you know, concrete answers.
And the question I keep having, Jake, is so my understanding is that in this Pizza Hut example, that Jackson Arnold was supposed to is supposed to tell the school, and the school is supposed to tell the clearinghouse and the $600. But then the question becomes, well, what if Jackson Arnold doesn't?
Yeah.
Like how will anyone find out about and suppose it's not
That's
Pizza
what I'm
Hut.
Saying.
Suppose
yeah, exactly. They're not going to do that.
Yes.
They're not. It's just like I'm not going to tell the IRS if I screwed up.
That's
you know what I'm saying? Like I, it's just I'm that doesn't make sense.
And how does the clearinghouse find out about a deal that was never reported to them or never reported to the school? And that's where the
enforcement. That would be if he's in a commercial for Pizza Hut or
right.
something. Like, there obviously has to be some sort of you know, showing for Pizza Hut to spend money for Jackson Arnold to be able to say, "Hey, I'm Jackson Arnold and I love Pizza Hut," or whatever. But to me, like, there's multiple things here as far as Auburn goes. And I realize you've had some commits flip and stuff like that. And some people are like, "Oh no, you know, Auburn doesn't have enough money," or this, that, and the other. The truth of the matter is, Auburn's got to win on the field. You win on the field, the money will flow like the rivers of ancient Babylon. You won't have that problem. Now, as far as the cap goes, everybody's going to have that 20.5 cap. I mean, I say that, Dan, but I wouldn't be shocked if you see a school that wants to spend $30 million and goes and sues the NCAA or whoever the heck they want to sue to try and get that fixed. But the minute Auburn's done everything else, they've recruited well off the field, right? You've had this momentum, you have the facility, but it's year three. And I know the coaching staff knows this, and it's not like they're out there not working hard in recruiting. But at the end of the day, if you're not winning on the field, which is the thing that matters the most, you're not going to bring the dollars in. It's just like having a scholarship, an academic scholarship in college. You may be studying really hard, but if you're failing tests and don't have the grades, you're not getting that scholarship money the next semester. So all this other stuff is just icing. If Auburn goes out there and goes 9-3 and is competitive by the time we get through November, you'll see some of those flips come back. But at the end of the day, you got to win on the field. All the other stuff is just talk.
No, you're absolutely right, Jake, and that's something we've been talking about. Is that I don't know of any place. I mean, maybe somebody could come up with one that in year three you could still be expecting people to not be concerned about the present, but just looking toward the future. Future's got to be now by year three.
Well, I mean, look, at the end of the day,
Congress. That's the one place you can do that,
yeah,
Jake.
I'm talking about in the real world.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But this isn't a complex issue. Like, you know, I know what George is doing. They're taking Shedarius Tootle and these guys in, and they're walking them through, and they're showing them games from the playoffs and all these trophies. And they're like, "You're committed to Auburn? So we can pay you more than Auburn, and you want to go to a place that's gone, that has been as bad as they have, that has never made the college football playoff? Why would you want to do that? Look at all these NFL draft picks we had. We'll pay you more money to come to Georgia, and then you'll make more money getting drafted higher than you would to go play at Auburn and go 5-7, or maybe luck up and play in the Birmingham Bowl or something." That's, at the end of the day, like, Auburn's got to do it on the field. And listen, I think Coach Freeze will. I actually think Auburn's going to be pretty good this year. But the minute that turns, you'll see recruiting turn. You'll see the NIL dollars go up, because Auburn has the capability to spend a lot of money. But they have to show it on the field, because I'm not investing right now if it's me. It's like Charles Barkley said, "You think I'm going to give you millions of dollars right now with what's going on? I wouldn't do that."
The grass needs to start going up in a lot of different spots. Jake, before we let you go, NBA draft tonight. First of all, where are you on Cooper Flagg as a pro? I mean, he's been sort of, you know, he's been one of the clearer cut number one overall picks in the last few NBA drafts. It's rare to have a guy, you know, this much of a consensus pick for this long who's going to go number one tonight. You know, what do you think of him as a player and how his pro career goes?
Well, I mean, the fact that he's still only like 12 years old and played that well, I think a lot of this is projecting, you know, what he can turn into. But the way I frame it is like this. Cooper Flagg doesn't have the sexiest game, right, compared to some other guys. But tell me, what is he bad at?
Mm-hmm.
What's he bad
yep.
at?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's good at everything. We use the term five-tool player in baseball. I mean, Cooper Flagg can shoot, can drive, can pass, can rebound, got a high IQ. The way he's able to draw fouls is going to be perfect in the NBA. I think the thing that makes him most attractive is he's a safe bet. And in the draft world, those are few and far between when you're talking about the 1, 2, or 3 pick.
Someone asked me about a Cooper Flagg comp the other day, and maybe it's just because I watched like a lot of the finals. I feel like he's like Pascal Siakam, but probably better than Siakam was at this age. Right, like, and if that's what you're getting, that can be the second best player on a champion, like, and maybe more, more than that.
He reminds me of another Duke player. He reminds me of Jason Tatum.
Sure,
that's who he reminds me of. Like, I mean, it's like you look at Jason. It's
a little more power game, a little more power game than Tatum. But I see it
a little. Well, I think he's more explosive than Tatum going to the basket.
What do you think of? Jhanai as a pro. He's probably not getting called tonight, but I would expect Jhanai to get drafted tomorrow.
Well, I hope so, and you know what Jhanai lacks with vertical athleticism. He's so smart as a rebounder. I just wonder. I know he has a long wingspan, but it just feels to me like if you're going to have the style of game that Jhanai Broom has, man, you need to be like 7'1" or 7'2" in that league. Like it just, I just wonder how it translates. Now, if his shot gets better, which I mean, it continuously got better at Auburn, then I think that adds another aspect to his game. I just don't know how great he's going to be under the basket without being over 7 feet tall or being very wide, kind of like Big Baby Davis or somebody that can just bully you. That's why, you know, I don't think he's going to go super high. But I'll tell you what, nobody's rooting harder for that guy than me.
Yeah, I hear you, Jake. Hey, we really appreciate you spending a little time with us here this afternoon. Let everybody know what's going on with Crane and Company.
Yeah, man, look, it's I know we got like 800 Major League Baseball season games left, and I know the Braves are starting to look like they're going to figure it out, but it's time, man. We got SEC Media Days coming up in a couple weeks. We have a full Auburn preview with Cole Kublick. You can find that on our YouTube channel at Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N and Company. We got a really deep dive on this Auburn-Baylor matchup as well on that Friday in week one. So, yeah, if you love college football, we do too. Just come over and hang out with us.
Thanks a lot, Jake. Again, appreciate it. And, understand you're out next week, so happy 4th.
Yeah, happy July 4th to you guys, and God bless America. I appreciate y'all having me on.
Great stuff, Jake. Take care, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind it down here on the Wednesday Drive.